To succeed, just let go. This is Willie Horton, exploring how we must and can take control of our state of mind and transform our lives. You're very welcome.
If you've ever wondered what I am talking about when I refer to what cognitive psychology calls the brain's automatic pilot and how it enables us make it through the day and little else when we're using our minds normally, there is no better illustration of how the automatic pilot malfunctions when we are out of our routine. Now, before I go any further, routine is the key word in that sentence, because the automatic pilot enables us to run our lives routinely. And of course, what that means is that nothing is ever going to change in our lives, and we are going to have to work extraordinarily hard to achieve the little wins that we might achieve with a lot of effort, a lot of stress, and a lot of hassle when we're using our minds normally. Bear in mind that evolution gave us a brain that is designed for survival. It is not designed to enable you do anything other than make it through the day. And as I just said, that means that our days are routine. A Monday is like any other Monday. Wednesday is like any other Wednesday, when perhaps by lunchtime on the Wednesday we say to ourselves, oh God, it's only a couple of days till the weekend. I'm looking forward to the weekend. And then so many people over the years have told me, before they got their head straight, that they sit down to their Sunday dinner on a Sunday evening and say, oh my God, it's Monday again tomorrow morning. Routine, routine, routine. We live in a holiday destination, and when people come on holidays, they are out of their routine. I recollect a conversation a number of years ago with the manager of the ski lift company in the town that we lived in at the time, Les Contamines-Montchois. We were having a conversation over a beer about the madness of normal crazy people. He said, oh, he said, you should be sitting where I'm sitting any day of the week during the ski season. He said, people come on holidays and they leave whatever brains they might have at home. He said, you should see the behaviour of people, the stupid things that people do. And of course, I recollect we had a very normal, crazy person holiday with us, ooh, in the dim and distant past. And I explained to him when he arrived with his family that it can often be difficult getting up the slope out of our driveway in the middle of winter. So for the week that he was there, what he would do, wait for it, would reverse up the driveway out onto the road, which happened to be the road that most of the traffic took to the ski lifts, park the car in the middle of the road with the hazard lights flashing, and run up and down the hill back into our house to bring skis, one ski at a time, to put them on the ski rack on the roof of his car. It was a spectacle that beggared belief. I recollect looking out the window, standing beside his son, saying to his son, what's your father doing? He said, your guess is as good as mine. He said, but this is my dad on the holidays. We see it all the time here. People on holidays having left whatever bits of brain that they might normally use back at home. Indeed, we see it on the road all of the time, where holidaymakers forget what rudimentary knowledge they might have had of the rules of the road when they actually find themselves going around a roundabout without any indication as to where they were going 5 times. We've seen it with our own 2 eyes. And then, having gone around the roundabout 5 times, decided to stop in the middle of the roundabout to get out a paper map. And everybody was scratching their heads. I could see them in all the other cars saying, that's a modern car that this guy has. It surely has GPS. Isn't it interesting, though, even as I say that, that we have become so dependent on aids like GPS to tell us where we're going? That's an aside. Just while I'm talking about cars and roundabouts, as I have said to you on many occasions before, we see people literally lose the plot, totally stressed out, fighting with each other, beating their children up whilst on holidays because they're so stressed out trying to enjoy themselves. I recollect one normal crazy people story, I'm going to come back to that in a moment, which was entitled Jumping from a Moving Car. We were coming out of the supermarket. There was a car in front of us, and we could see that the driver and his partner, wife or girlfriend, were having a blazing argument. He pulled out onto the roundabout in front of the supermarket, and as he did, she opened the passenger door of the car and jumped out, stormed across the middle of the roundabout, and he drove off in a temper. We don't know what happened subsequently. We don't really care to know what happened subsequently. But this is the kind of stuff that you see when you observe normal crazy people. And as I said in one of the live Zooms that we had a couple of weeks ago, this is one of the first things that you become aware of when you start becoming aware, full stop, as a result of developing a clear state of mind, as a result of developing a presence of mind, as a result of you beginning to become present in the moment. One of the first things that we become aware of is the utter madness all around us. Now, I have been asked quite recently why I don't publish normal crazy people stories on a Thursday morning anymore. It isn't that I ran out of normal crazy people stories. It is that I decided that it would be probably more productive for us all to dwell on the things that we can do to move our own lives forward. And, you know, by the way, when we move our own lives forward, in the very process of doing so, the presence that we develop has an impact on those around us. Even normal, crazy people will notice that there is something different about us, that there is perhaps something attractive or more attractive about us. Because, as we said recently, when we are present, when our energy is flowing freely, we actually become attractive. And that obviously doesn't just mean that you begin to look good. It means that you attract into your life the people, events, and pieces of information that you need scattered along your path to lead you forward to the life that is best for you. We often call them synchronicities, but then again, we had a conversation with program owners on Zoom a couple of weeks ago where one of the girls on the call said, "I've discovered that almost everything that happens to me in my life is a synchronicity." Now, this girl has been an online program owner right from the beginning, right to the end of 2018. And indeed, I knew her beforehand as a client as well. She's been developing her ability to be present a very long time. Now, don't let that scare you. People often say to me, "How long will it take me to develop my awareness? How long will it take me to start experiencing things falling into my lap? How long will it take me to start experiencing some of the perfect moments to which I might set my mind as a result of taking control of my mind?" We talked about that recently. How long will it take me? And some people, it takes a while, and a while could be weeks, months, rarely years. But some people with whom I've worked have been struck by the proverbial lightning on the road to Damascus the very day on which they begin to realize that there is a world beyond the world that they thought existed. There is a person beyond the person whom they thought they were. And it's wonderful. Now, the person whom they thought they were is what I want to explore in this episode. And that's why I started out with a couple of normal, crazy people stories. I have more. I have loads more, obviously. And by the way, before we go any further, just as an amusing digression, I don't have to even leave my house to witness normal, crazy behavior. Now, I do have to look out the window, I have to say, on one of our neighbors. This particular neighbor, what can I say? About a year after we moved into this house first, 15 years ago, we took the family to celebrate. I can't remember what the occasion was. We don't need much of an occasion as an excuse to celebrate anything. We all went to Manhattan for a 10-day break, myself, my wife, and the three kids. And when we came back, our friend across the road, who shall remain nameless to protect the afflicted. He said, you were away for a couple of weeks. I said, we were in New York. Did you drive? He asked. All I can assume is that when he didn't see the car there, because we'd driven to the airport and left our car there, he assumed that we'd gone off on holidays in our car. But did we drive to New York? Anyway, there's more. As I said, I only have to look out my window. I had a conversation with this guy a couple of years ago. He was distraught. He had planted a whole load of lettuce plants and snails had eaten them all. He said, do you have any solution for dealing with snails? I said, on occasion, I have used beer to deter snails. It's something I picked up on the internet. If you put some beer out in the vegetable patch, the snails will die happy. So I was talking to him about a week later. He said, I planted a whole load of new lettuce plants and they were all eaten too. He said, the beer didn't work. And then I looked over his shoulder at his vegetable patch. And what did I see? An unopened bottle of beer sitting in the middle of the vegetable patch. I didn't have the heart to say anything to him. But I should say something to him in the context of what else he does in his vegetable patch. Because, and it's a very French thing, I suppose, within 5 meters of the toilet that is inside his front door, this guy relieves himself in his own vegetable patch and then eats the produce. All right, so much for toilet humour. Let's move on to something that will give us more of an insight into what I really want to explore in this week's episode. I started with normal crazy people because we have so many examples of normal people telling the most outlandish stories about themselves. One particular couple. Now, maybe perhaps it's when you move to a foreign country and you start talking to people who have also moved to the foreign country. You know, maybe people who move to foreign countries are odd in the first place. But there was this particular couple who lived in the village that I mentioned earlier on, Les Côtes-Mines-Marchois, up the mountains, one of the best ski stations in this part of the world, with some of the best snow in the Alps. But these individuals owned a chambre d'hôte, in other words, kind of a guest house. It was more than a bed and breakfast because they served an evening meal as well. But the lady of the house told us when we met her first that before she moved to France, she had been a lawyer, and a very high-powered lawyer at that. A few weeks later, we were chatting to herself and her husband, and it came up in conversation that she had actually been a mathematics professor at Oxford. Totally different story. And then a few weeks later, she told us that she had owned a business in the UK that, a very profitable business in the UK, that made fitted curtains for some of the rich and famous. A few weeks later, we were walking over to the village and encountered this particular lady with another lady. And she said, oh, I'd like to introduce you to my best friend who has flown over from the UK, having made our curtains for us. She's flown over to hang them for us. I said, I thought. And then I stopped. There was no point. Every time, I could go on and on and on. Every time we met this individual, she had a different story about herself. And obviously, in every single story, she was magnificent, the best and most sought after seamstress for the rich and famous curtains in the UK, the best lawyer, the most renowned university professor. None of them was true. I actually had a conversation one evening in the local bar in the village with her husband. And as one often does after a few drinks, one says something that is better left unsaid. So I actually asked him, what is it with your wife that she has so many different stories about herself? He said she likes feeling important. Now, there is an insight into why normal crazy people tell stories about themselves. It's just in this particular case, her line of storytelling was so inconsistent and so outlandish that one could immediately realize that one was being told a fib, a little white lie, or a string of little white lies that didn't go together at all. Now, of course, the problem with lying is that the more lies you tell, the more you can't remember what lies you told. Now, am I saying that people who make up stories about themselves are liars? Am I saying that normal crazy people are born liars? Nobody's a born liar, but everybody who's using their mind normally is a liar. How can I say that with certainty? We learn, as we've said before, during the third year of our lives, how to communicate, collaborate, negotiate, manipulate, and lie to other people to enable us experience a meeting of minds between my wants as a 2.5 or 3-year-old and what I have to say or do to enable me get my wants. We've talked about this before, and how developmental psychology has explored for decades how up to the age of 2 years of age, the developing child thinks they are the center of the universe. And around the 2-year mark, they begin to realize that they're not. This causes a crisis of identity, or a major crisis. I don't know if it is a saying in anywhere other than Ireland and the United Kingdom, the children acting out at that age are going through the terrible twos. This is what is actually happening when a child experiences the terrible twos. They realize they're not the center of the universe. They realize that no one ever thought they were the center of the universe other than them. And they realize that everybody else that they encounter has an entirely different perspective of life than they have. And they realize that I'm going to have to make my way in this life, and I'm going to have to duck and dive, weave and manipulate people, negotiate, collaborate, communicate and lie to people to enable me get what I want, to enable me ensure that between me and the people with whom I am collaborating, there is a meeting of minds. This whole process between the age of 2 and 3 is called the learning of theory of mind. That we all have our own mind. And everybody's mind has a totally different perspective. Now, before we go any further, what does that tell us about reality? Is there any such thing as reality if everybody has their own version of reality? Now, we've spoken at length about one's own version of reality over the years and how when we're using our mind normally, and by the way, that goes for 96% of the people that you will meet today, 96% of people in the developed world are normal, crazy people. They are people who have their own version of reality that bears, at best, a passing resemblance to the real thing. They use a process known as cognitive appraisal to make sense of what their 5 senses are actually telling them, what they're seeing, feeling, hearing, smelling and tasting. And in the process, because they're using stuff that they learned when they were learning theory of mind between the age of 2 and 3, they use what they learned at that age to try and make sense of what is happening now in their adult lives. This third year of our lives, when we learn theory of mind, is fundamental and foundational. This is the time of our lives when we are still soaking up everything that is going on around us. And unfortunately, for the vast majority of people, soaking up the stuff that is done to us or that we think is being done to us that makes us feel bad about ourselves, as a result of which we take what psychology calls psychological snapshots, which become what cognitive psychology calls stored knowledge. The stuff that we use to make sense of our daily lives in the future, the stuff that is used on repeat every day that makes our lives routine, and the stuff that falls down when we are out of our routine, as we discussed right at the beginning of this episode. Now, before we go any further, there's a beautiful piece of research, a very amusing and entertaining piece of research done by the Open University in the 1980s about the difference between a 2-year-old's ability to lie and a 3-year-old's ability to lie. In both cases, the children in the research are asked by their parents to look after a large freshly baked chocolate cake while the parent goes upstairs to make the beds or clean the bathroom. The details don't actually matter. When the parent comes down, in all of the cases, some of the cake is gone. Two-year-olds whose mouths are completely surrounded, almost up to the eyeballs, with chocolate are asked, "Did you eat that cake?" And they say, "No, wasn't me." Now, that's an attempt at a lie, but it is the kind of attempt that gives us an insight into the fact that they are saying something that if they had learned a little bit of theory of mind, they would know they weren't going to get away with. What about the three-year-olds? Well, the three-year-olds always had a story. The dog was trying to attack the cake. The window flew open and a gust of wind was about to blow the cake off the table. I could go on and on and on. Ridiculous stories, but they had a story. They knew, or at least they thought they knew, that they could get away with eating a bit of cake and not admitting to it because they were learning how to lie. They were learning how to tell stories. I met so many people over the years who had stories, cover stories, if you like, for how great they had progressed in their career. There's one particular guy that I've known for many years who was in the rag trade, in other words, importing clothes, and then in the insurance business, and then was selling beauty water. Yeah, you've heard me, beauty water. And then he was selling anything on which he could get his hands to anybody who would buy what he was trying to sell. Now, this guy had a wonderful story about how he was the leading executive coach in Europe and how he had been pursuing that particular endeavor for 25 years. It was all a fabrication. In the same way, there's somebody else that I know who worked his way through more senior jobs in a variety of industries over a short period of time than a football manager. You know, these football managers who are fired after three games into the season. This guy was all over the place. This track record, if you can call it that, was spread over about 15 years. But lo and behold, a few years later, apparently for those 15 years, he had been developing a particular type of approach to business consultancy. And he was the leader of that kind of approach to business consultancy in his country. In fact, he had actually introduced it to the country in question. People tell stories about themselves all of the time. And I know the two examples that I've given you there are about people embellishing their CV, if I can put it nicely. And we know, you know, politicians embellish their CVs. Some politicians, some leading politicians have been accused of plagiarism in addition to massaging their CVs and have had to resign as a result. But we all tell stories about who we are now because, and I go back to my friend, the lawyer, the professor, and the curtain maker, who is telling stories to make herself feel more important. Why would anybody need to make themselves feel more important if they knew how important they really are in the first place? And of course, the answer stems from what we learned during the third year of our lives, when we didn't just learn how to lie. We learned how to lie to ourselves. And by that I mean most of the stories that people tell about themselves are fervently believed by the people telling them. The truth is anything you care to believe. Why can't we accept ourselves for who we are? The answer to that question is we don't know who we are. We think we know who we are as a result of what we learned during the third year of our lives. And what we learned during the third year of our lives has precious little to nothing to do with who we really are. I often talk about how when you develop your ability to be present, how you become aware. As we said a few minutes ago, you first of all become aware of the madness all around you. But more importantly, you become aware of the fact that there is something deep down that is akin to the real you. This is a phrase I've used so often, people say to me, but who is the real me? And the answer always is, you'll know when they present themselves. Ooh, now that's an interesting phrase, isn't it? Because the word present is in there. Who you really are will present themselves when you are yourself present. We obviously, as we've discussed on so many occasions, develop our ability to be present by meditating. It's the only scientifically validated way that we have to develop our presence, to turn on the so-called attentional spotlight in the left prefrontal cortex of the brain, and to actually turn up to the here and now, be properly focused, and know what is going on. As a result of that process, and it is an inevitable result, it isn't something that won't happen to you because maybe you think you are more deeply in need of cover stories than other people. It is inevitable that the more you meditate, with developing awareness, you will become aware of an energy within that instinctively knows what is best for you, and that is actually talking to you, but is rarely listened to because of the stories we tell ourselves. Let me unpack that sentence. I had a conversation with somebody who had told, she'd told all kinds of stories about herself. Her stories were from a personal point of view in relation to a couple of marriages that she had had. We won't go into it. It's neither here nor there in the context of the point I want to make now. This girl began to discover who she really was. And on one occasion, I had a conversation with her, and she said, there is a decision that I have to make, and I don't know how to make the right decision on the basis of the number of bad decisions that I've made in the past. Well, the first point I made to her was that you didn't make those bad decisions in the past. Who you thought you were, the bundle of thoughts that you learned during the third year of your life, that is the imaginary person that made those bad decisions. You can't blame yourself for decisions that you hadn't made. And indeed, there's no blame involved in anything we ever talk about here. This is not a blame game. This is a responsibility game, taking responsibility for your own state of mind. I said, you don't need to figure out what the best decision is for you to make. You need to listen to your intuition. You need to listen to the real you. You need to listen to your gut instinct, because our gut instinct is talking to us all the time. Now, if you were a normal crazy person, which obviously I've been talking to her for quite a while, she wasn't at that stage. She'd been meditating for a while. But as I said to her, if you were a normal crazy person, you'd never hear your gut instinct, or almost never. You might, on the odd occasion, get a feeling that something is wrong and go and do it anyway. That's what normal crazy people do. But I said to her, your intuition is talking to you. She said, I wish she'd shout louder. I said, she's shouting at the top of her lungs. You need to slow yourself down. You need to allow her out. You need to listen to her. Last week's podcast episode was called Slowing Down to Speed Up, and I've just again suggested that you slow down. We all need to slow ourselves down physically so that we can slow ourselves down mentally, so that we can begin to allow what is inside out, so that we can, through our own presence, allow the real us present themselves, so that we can begin to realize that whatever stories we might have told ourselves, or indeed told others, and however much we may have believed some or all of those stories are not just irrelevant, they are entirely and utterly unnecessary, because the person that you really are doesn't need to tell a story at all. The person that you really are simply needs to be allowed to present themselves so that they can weave their magic in the same way as we briefly alluded to that from the perspective of high-performance athletes in last week's episode, so that they can weave their magic in the present moment. You, listening to this, allow your inner self weave their magic. Allow your attractive inner self attract into your life all of the encounters, all of the people, all of the information, and all of the events that will inevitably lead you forward into a world that the person that you thought you were, who thought they needed stories to make themselves feel better about themselves or more important about themselves, that person couldn't even begin to imagine. The world is at your feet. All you have to do is put your best foot forward in the here and now.
You've been listening to Succeed, Just Let Go. Hope you've got a little something to help you transform your life today.